Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome you again to another episode of Africa on the Move. That's right, it's Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother African, we're going to be discussing a very fundamental question that our people have been asking from its existence since they first arrived in the Western Hemisphere. And the question is, are we free? Where we're going to get our freedom, and how we're going to get it. But today we're going to focus solely on the question of how we free. We believe that this is an important topic to be discussed among us as it relates to how we're going to advance and move our people forward. Right now, you know, wherever there is not a set of united ideals, then it will be hard to unite a collective people. So around this whole concept, or this illusion of inclusion, this whole question of freedom, the whole question of democracy, these type of ideals, the concepts, they are creating havoc throughout our community. So today, we want to at least deal with this fundamental issue of, are we free? What is this question of freedom? What is this concept? What is this principle? What is this entity that we call freedom? What does it mean? How does it look? How do we apply it? When we do achieve it, how will we know it? So discuss this particular matter with us today. We have three panelists with us. We have Brother Al Hodge, D. Neen. He's from Senegal. We also have with us Dr. Zoe Spencer. She's a professor. She works in the sociology department at Virginia State University. And we have Brother Haki Kamathi Machoki. He's the organizer for the African Awareness Association. What we do first of all, we're going to welcome our presenters. And we're going to ask each one of them to briefly tell us something about them. Give us a little backdrop of who you are. Brother Al Hodge, can you give our listening audience a backdrop of who you are?
Well, thank you, first of all, Mr. Lee, for the invite. And I would like to say to the audience that my name is Al Hodge. Middle name Jibril Nyang, but I mostly usually go by the middle name Jibril, but whichever way you go is okay. I am originally from Senegal, West Africa. It is a small country on the west coast of Africa. The population is about now 14 million people, and a very diverse population. We got a lot of foreigners living with us, French people, American people, and we got a history of being colonized by the French people. Basically, I went to school there and went to college there, moved to United States in 2000, maybe like almost 14 years ago. Since then, I've been going back and forth, and here I am as an American citizen now, and commingling with my brothers and sisters here, and learning a lot about the African American culture, and trying to, you know, build something, some relationship, and some understanding amongst us. Basically, that's a little. I'm not going to be too long. That's briefly what I can say about myself. And I've been working here since 2000, as I said. So basically, that's what I want to say for now. And I let the mic to go back mic to Brother Lee. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Al Hodge from Senegal. We next will go to our next panelist, Dr. Zoe Spencer. Professor at Virginia State University, Dr. Zoe, tell the people something about who you are.
Peace. As you said, I am an associate professor of sociology at Virginia State University. My name is Zoe Spencer, but most importantly, I grew up in Berry Farms Projects in Southeast Washington, D.C., so I am from the neighborhood, proud of being from the neighborhood. I grew my consciousness in the halls of Howard University, and, you know, that's all I, you know, that's what I bring, just my commitment to my people and my commitment to my community.
Excellent, excellent. And next we'll go to our brother Haki Kumafi Machoki, who's an organizer for the African Awareness Association. Brother Haki, can you tell our listening viewers a little something about you?
Yeah, I've been involved in church for the last 30 years. Currently, I'm dealing with the African Awareness Association. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. You got a little backdrop. You got a little sound coming through your, through the backdrop of your phone, but go ahead, sir.
Okay. Yeah. So currently, I'm working with the African Awareness Association, and my focus is primarily on building institutions. One of the things is when we talk about the dissolution of so many families, particularly even African families and in America, it takes a question in terms of how the kids getting the right kind of information they need in terms of being able to self-actualize and to be all they can do. And obviously the question is no. So therefore I feel that institutions have served that niche in terms of making sure our kids get the proper information in terms of understanding who they are, their competition, the accomplishments to the world as well as to America. And they'll be in a position to do their things for themselves and for their people. So that's what I'm currently doing.
So we'd like to thank all three of y'all for taking this time out to deal with this timely subject. At the end of the program, we hope that we'll be in a position where we can be much more clear to answer this question, are we free as of today? So to start off, the first question I'd like each one of you to address, and we'll start with you, Sister Zoe. Could you just give us your definition of what does it mean to be free? What does it mean to you to be free, Dr. Zoe?
I could approach the question of what it means to be free from, you know, from different perspectives. What it means to be free spiritually, physically free is being out of bondage and, you know, to me, being at peace to experience the universe and experience life without confines. I think freedom and liberation are two different things. If you're talking about the social construct of freedom, then I don't believe that that exists. True freedom doesn't exist in a world or in a society or in a civilization where you have government, and even the term government means to be governed. So true freedom can't exist with confines and rules and laws that are established by men in order to promote or protect power dynamics. So I think there's a difference between, you know, spiritual freedom and what freedom means kind of ethereally, being the freedom to experience life without confines, and then the social construction or the political construction of the term freedom, which means that we have the illusion of being free, but we're truly not liberated. And I think I'm going to move ahead of myself, so I'll stop there and give the floor back to you.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're coming back to that philosophy. That's very interesting. good. That's what we want. Tonight, you know, one of the things about Africa on the Move, we like to speak truth to power. And that's the only way we know, and that's the only way we're going to go. Because we know ultimately it's by understanding, knowing the truth, and acting the truth. That will be the basis of setting us free, or humanity free. Brother Al Hodge, give us your perspective on this whole concept, what it means to be free to you.
Well, actually, I don't want to add too much about what my sister just said, you know, and you know, the true freedom is going to be hard to conceive, but actually, being free is not being confined, and that's the thing, you know, just being able to choose your way and to act to move without being restrained, to approach whoever you want to approach, to discuss any subject you want to discuss, to learn whatever you want to learn, to practice whatever religion or spirituality you want to choose, just being free. But it's also not going to be a wide open freedom, because that doesn't exist. This is a problem we are facing, actually, not having the same opportunities than everybody else. So my definition of freedom is that just being liberated and be able to choose on your own. That's my definition of freedom.
And last and not least, we'll go to Brother Haki, and Brother Haki, will you articulate what freedom means to you? What does it mean to be free to you?
Well, I think a sort of different slant when it comes to questions in terms of freedom. I don't think that any system, any government is going to be free of social and political structures. That's just part and parcel in terms of dealing with, you know, competing interests. So that has to exist. My thing is that when you talk about freedoms, freedom exists to the extent as an individual, the human being able to self-actualize. Is that able to be autonomous? Are you able to do the kind of things, you know, that are good for you, that are good for society, those kind of things which are wholesome? So I think in that context, when we talk about freedom, and clearly in context of political construct, talk about two kinds of systems that exist in the world, one being capitalism and the other being socialism. Certainly, in my estimation, when you talk about the two and contrast the two, certainly socialism affords you more freedom as opposed to capitalism, simply being because it recognizes the innate need and desires of human beings. So therefore, the government's ambition to actually provide those kind of things that human beings need in terms of excelling. So, and we contrast that with capitalism, one of the things is that because it's based upon the bottom line, it's based upon the capitalist class essentially making the rules, then, of course, any types of freedoms in terms of your needs, your aspirations, your desires are not important. They're important only to the extent that you can produce money for the capitalist class, and so, therefore, your freedom, quote-unquote, is severely restricted or limited. So I think socialism is much more indicative of the kind of freedoms that is in the interest of human beings. And when you look at the situation where the Scandinavian nations was consistently do well economically, socially, politically, versus capitalist societies like America, where you see the frustration, the anger, the chaos, it's indicative of the kind of system that people live under. So clearly you're more free under one than another. Whether or not you can obtain absolute freedom is more a subjective term. But in the political context, of course, when you talk about freedom as related to human beings and your aspiration, then socialism would be the system to actually achieve that.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I was leading down the road where I wanted the panelists to discuss freedom in the context of the social system that we live under. For example, when we're looking at the capital class perspective of freedom, and if you look at a working class perspective of freedom, maybe how do they differ, or how do you view that, Sister Zo, when we look at the various classes that exist under the system that we live under, that we are governed under, that we call capitalism? Are they the same type of freedom, or is there some distinction, difference?
I think, you know, if you're talking about, if you're limiting freedom to a political or a social or a governmental or an economic sense, then, of course, there are going to be greater privileges for different systems. In the system of capitalism, be it capitalism or socialism, we have to understand that any system is removing men from their natural rights and privileges, their universal and natural rights and privileges on Earth, because all systems are about control and dominance of resources. Capitalism, of course, is the worst because, of course, the capitalist class makes the rules, and capitalism in and of itself creates a division between the working class and the ruling class, where the ruling class own and control the means of production. They control wealth, they control labor, and in such, everybody else has to sell their labor in exchange for a wage that we use to buy our basic necessities or even to survive. So, I mean, if you're going to confine freedom and the term freedom, term liberation, to systems, I would argue that, you know, there are certain systems that have greater privileges, but any system that is political and economic and that is designed to control the resources of this globe and humans have to operate within the confines, then no freedom and no liberation will exist in any system. And that's just the abstract concept of what freedom really is, because the term freedom implies that people have the ability to live without confines. So anytime you have a structure in place, that structure limits a person's individual rights and puts that person into a collective where they have to exist within the confines that are established by the system, be it a socialist system, a capitalist system, a communist system, etc. So, yeah.
Okay. Brother Yeah, hi. Do you like to, you have any comments you want to make on this particular issue right now?
Yeah, I can touch on it because that's the thing. Freedom as a whole is not going to be possible in this world. But like, it's no comparison also when we're talking about the capitalism system and the socialist system. I think there is a net difference between the two. And to my definition, the capitalism system is just, there is no limit to the greed of the empowerment of a group. You know, however you get it, how much you can get. I mean, you know, you're just going to cross a lot of rules, you know, and it's going to take away a lot of freedom because it's all about the money and the power. It's more suited for people which is not quite, you know, a very good definition of freedom, but is maybe closer to the aspiration of for people to be free, the socialism system. Basically, that's what my take on that. Is more closer to be in the socialist system to be free than any other system.
I believe this is an open question to any of y'all, and y'all can speak to it. You know, any one of y'all can speak to this question. A lot of times when we try to solve issues and understand issues, we always like to know the origin of that particular issue that we're trying to resolve. In terms of just this whole concept, philosophically speaking, of free and freedom, where did that word freedom or freedom come from? How did it evolve into human existence? What is the anthropological, psychosociological, historical development of this concept we call freedom of free? Can anybody speak to that? Hackey, Dr. Zoe? I'm just curious in terms of, since this has been a word that has been used and understood differently by so many people for so long, what is the origin of just this concept itself called freedom and freedom, freedom and being free?
Well, one of the things is that when you go back and you look at the Roman Empire, one of the things that they talked about was the ability of those and among aristocrats to be in a position to extract labor and to do the kind of things they need to do in terms of, you know, maximizing the amount of money they can actually make. And so therefore, in that sense, that labor or the exploitation of people became indispensable in terms of providing the aristocrats with what they need. And so from the perspective of the Roman Empire, particularly when we started talking about the evolution of the Catholic Church, this issue in terms of free related only to the ability of those who are well off to get what they wanted. So if they wanted labor at the expense of all of these poor individuals, then it should be their right. And so that is when we look at the question in terms of free, that is something can be traced back to the Roman Empire. But more recently, when you look at people like the economist out of the University of Chicago, Milton Friedman, he was one of those who was big on this whole term in terms of free. And what he was talking about, when he talked about free, he was talking about more austerity as it relates to the economy, where he's talking about, no taxes on wealth and on corporations. Minimum wage, he would be adamantly opposed to because he feels that paying minimum wage would be somehow make the capitalist system inefficient. To most people, that would sound rather bizarre when you talk about paying people for the labor that somehow becomes inefficient because you're paying people what they're worth or what they contribute to the business as inefficient is sort of crazy. He would also say that in terms of investment, that sky's the limit, that corporations or wealthy should be investing in and everything they want, irrespective of the kind of danger or the risk involved in certain transactions when it comes to the stock market and the bonds. So therefore, that question in terms of free, what he's talking about, that your freedom is limited according to your worth. In other words, the more you make, the more, quote-unquote, productive you are, and the more freedoms, quote-unquote, you should enjoy. And so therefore, when we talk about things like criminal justice, when it comes to injustices that inflict African people or the poor or working people, those same injustices should not inflict the wealthy simply because they are productive. And to give you an example, recently in Colorado, this young fellow who worked with he's a hedge fund manager with Morgan Stanley. And, he hit a bicyclist from behind at high speed. He took off. He left. They eventually caught up. They eventually caught him, and when they brought him before the magistrate, he was processed. But at the moment he was arraigned, what happened was the prosecutor had decided that he would not go to prison. And the reason why he wouldn't go to prison was simple, that he makes too much money. He's too important to the economy that if he go to prison, that somehow it'll make it impossible for him to find a similar kind of job. And so as far as Milton Friedman is concerned, certainly that kind of discrepancy when it comes to the dispensation of law will be justified simply because this man is, in fact, wealthy and quote-unquote, makes him free, which is tantamount to being free. And so in terms of freedom is a question of, you know, and now if you're talking to poor people in terms of what it is to be free or working people, they'll probably tell you, well, free is the ability to get the kind of things I need in terms of providing for my family, to be autonomous, you know, to live this life without having to worry about paying bills or how to educate my children and so on. So I think there's a contrasting ideas in terms of what constitutes free, depending on who you talk to. But historically, there's no question. When a ruling class talk about free, they're not talking about free to the extent that people, all people, should be free to be autonomous, to self-actualize, or to have food, to have shelter, to have proper education. That's not what the capitalists are saying. They don't think that you're privy to those kind of things, nor should you have those kind of things. They're saying those kind of things are worthy only to those who deserve them. So this is a fundamental contradiction when we start talking about this question in terms of free. And this is important we understand. So when we talk about this question of free, it's a question of who are you talking to in relationship to this question of being free.
Can I interject, Brother Lee? Yes,
of course.
Thank you, because I have a completely different perspective, actually. And what I would argue is that, you know, freedom and Naeem Akbar immediately comes to my mind, breaking the chains of psychological slavery. The socio-political freedom that we seem to be talking about or confining the term to is the illusion that people have equal opportunity to compete in a confining system that's been established to protect the interests of the ruling class. That's what that is. So, in essence, the ruling class have the freedom to exploit global resources, and we're not just talking about money, because money is just a social construct that pretty much places a value, a symbolic value on the resources that are being exploited. And so when you talk about how capitalism operates, you have global capitalism that operates in the form of colonialism, imperialism, and neocolonialism of other people's lands, and you have capitalism operating solely on the exploitation of labor. So what the brother just argued to me, I have a completely different perspective. The man who owns the corporation does no labor. What he does, he exploits the labor of others who in turn produce for him, and what they produce, the surplus that they produce for the ruling class, creates a profit that makes him wealthy because the distribution of his wealth to the people that work for him is unequal. But in order to get people to feel like they're not being oppressed, you have to promote this symbolism of freedom, this symbolism of democracy and equality in the society and free enterprise in the society. But the reality of it is that in a capitalist system, in the aristocratic system, in the social system that's designed and devoted to the exploitation of natural resources, those who wish to control the resources, production of the resources, and the distribution of the wealth obtained from the exploitation of resources and labor, they have freedom, but everybody else within the confine of the system that they set up in order to protect that interest do not. That's my my opinion is that there is no freedom, and freedom has not operated in social systems since really, if we want to go back to Africa, you know, since early civilizations in Africa before colonialism, imperialism, national and global trade became factors, because Greeks and Romans were way, way after civilizations existed and trade existed in Africa. So, I mean, we haven't known freedom, you know, since men were at one and at peace with nature, and it was about, you know, producing for your sustenance and not producing for wealth. That wealth-producing system has created inequality and has really negated freedom for humanity since that time. That's my opinion.
Well, Aki, responds back, or?
Oh, no. I mean, yes, what you say is correct, but the only problem is that one of the things we have to understand is that we talk about exploitation as somehow that it's done in the context of people actually thinking about that process. And in fact, we got a system in place which people don't have to think about. It's just innate to the whole process in terms of production. So we had to understand this question: exploitation is in fact built into the system. And so this whole question in terms, again, this question in terms of being free, we have to understand that the reality is that you have to. One or two systems. There's only choices that you have. There are no other third choices. And the only third choice, and if I'm hearing this correctly, let me just finish. The only third choice, if I'm hearing this correctly, is one basically, which you alluded to earlier, which is one of the religious theme. And that, of course, gets us into another ball game, which we're talking about. We talked about freedom, liberalization. Then we're talking about a very subjective, it differs according to who you're talking in terms of their understanding in terms of liberation. So, therefore, if I'm understanding her correctly, maybe she can clarify. But if she's talking about the only true liberation in terms of human beings is in the realm of religion, then we need to talk about that, if that's what she's saying, implying.
I didn't say anything about religion, because religion is also a social construct that's designed to promote conformity to our oppression. And I think we should be careful about using the term innate, and I think that we should be careful about limiting our freedoms to the systems that have been provided to us by men who set the systems up in order to preserve their interests. And see, and that's the concern that I have about the term freedom and liberation. Liberation means removing yourself out of bondage and removing yourself out of all oppression. So when you're talking about liberation and you're talking about freedom as a concept, to then argue that we have to choose, you know, even when we look at the political system, I'm not free as a citizen if I only have to choose, or if I'm only able to choose two candidates from two political parties. I am not free as a human being economically if I only have to choose between capitalism and socialism and communism. True freedom and liberation means being able to operate within a system, within this universe, and within this earth without the confines that are established by social and political systems. And so, you know, I think a part of that and a part of the success of our oppression, you know, when we're talking specifically about African people, a part of the success of our oppression is the promotion of ideological hegemony that forces us to believe that we must operate within the confines of an oppressive system that's been established for us, and that anything outside of those systems don't exist. And I think that mental, Naeem Akbar would argue that psychological enslavement is what truly stops African people from seeking true liberation.
Let me respond.
Hold up one second. Let me get Brother Al Haji jump in here, and then you can come back, Brother Haki. And we also can let our audience know that y'all listen to Africa on the Move. In the next 10 minutes or so, we'd like for you to call in, and we'd like for you to share your views and comments on the discussion on I'll Be Free. And so far, the information that has been flowing by our panelists, we'd like for you to call in at 323-679-0841. 323-679-0841. One of the greatest battles that we must have a knee as an oppressed people is a ideological battle. This is what you're seeing is taking place today, and this is very important. Brother Hodge, you can jump right on in, then we'll come back to you, Brother Haki. Brother Hodge, your questions.
Yes, Right, thank you.
You'd like to make?
Well, I think this the freedom thing is kind of it's on the borderline. You know, everybody, what they're saying is based on their experience and based on what they know. But what I would like to say is that, you know, as Malcolm says, nobody can give you freedom. Nobody can give you equality. You got to take it. So in that perspective, it's just on the best-to-best cases, you know. Some people just think they're free because of the environment they live in. They have the capacity to do certain things. And some other people would like to have more. In that sense, you know, the debate can be really open. And what I was thinking is, for me, to be free, you have to be able to choose, you know, I mean, political-wise, to choose your leaders, to be able to, not from, you know, one candidate, like you say, or you can, you will be able to choose from many candidates. There is no limitation on the freedom. You can have an independent person who ran for no limitation. As far as also as the spirituality, you shouldn't be boxed in and to have to be able to just choose. You have to be convinced and make your own choice. And, you know, freedom is way broader than what we have seen so far as, you know, the system we live in. Either it's capitalism or socialism or communism. And basically is on the best cases. You know, the what means freedom for an American, maybe not a freedom for somebody who's from Asia or from the Middle East. And, you know, there is no right or wrong. It's just like, to me, as simple as a group of people or an individual or a country. So, you know, but it's always be interesting to have a debate and to understand where the people stand on this subject, you know. But freedom is very very complex, and for me is best in on the best cases.
Okay, Brother Haki, you had a point you want to make last time when Sister Zoe responded to your position. Your point, Brother Haki.
Yeah, my point is that, you know, I as I listen to the sister, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, she has a very existential view in terms of life. One of the things that she said earlier, she talked about natural law. Now, if natural law is indicative of innate, I don't know what is. So that's the first thing. Second thing, we have to understand that as organisms, as human beings, we have to coexist. We have to coexist not only for our existence, but the existence of all. And so in that context, we have to work together. You have to have some system that exists. And so this notion that somehow, you know, that the two system that I qualify is somehow is not an option, somehow not indicative of being able to represent freedom. I'm just hard pressed to even understand that. So, you know, maybe, you know, I'm missing something in terms of the question, the view that the sister's taking. So I'm going to get back to this question in terms of natural law. When she talks about natural law, precisely what are you talking about? Because one of the things that when you talk about natural law, this notion that all of us are human beings are innately, for lack of a better term, selfish. So for those of us who are not innately selfish or unselfish, then somehow the only way we can be perceived by society as a whole is crazy. And so, you know, so my question is to you, you know, when you talk about natural law, what do you mean natural law? Is that objective speaking, or that's subjective?
Well, there are two concepts of natural law from Western thought, and one is from Hobbes, and what you just stated is a theory actually from Thomas Hobbes who argued that men in their natural state are naturally selfish, naturally brutish, and naturally warlike. There's another opposing theorist, Rousseau, who argued that men in their natural state are naturally balanced, naturally peaceful, and naturally communal people. And the only time that crisis will exist between men is if there's a shortage of resources. However, the law of Mayotte, which is African, Afro-centered, Kemetic philosophy, which was the governing concept before there was government in Kemet and many parts of dynastic Africa, argues that men exist in harmony and in balance with nature, and that natural law would argue that men are not supposed to exploit the resources of nature for their own gain, but the things that are provided in nature are to be used by not only men, but to be used by all creatures for their sustenance and survival. And in such, if things are in abundance in nature and people are able to sustain and survive and thrive in nature, then that's natural law. Social law comes into play when men begin to produce, and then men begin to produce a surplus. Men begin to trade, and then trade creates an economy where the exploitation of natural resources creates division, gender role division. It also creates a division in labor, and that division creates inequality. And then the system is set up in order to preserve that. So that's my definition of the difference between social, and I didn't make it up. This is just theory and Afrocentric philosophy. That's the difference between men existing in their natural state and then social law. And then the freedom that is confined in men in their natural state or natural law takes on a whole different manifestation than the term freedom that's confined into a social law or men in their social state, is what I'm arguing.
No, let me just go back and take it from a different perspective, because I'm not sure you're answering the question. But anyway, here's the thing. All right. Even if you're talking about Egypt, and you talk about Maya, you talk about Kemet, and you talk about Maya, fine. And you talk about, you allude to the fact that governments at that point weren't quote-unquote government, if I'm understanding you correctly. My position is that, in fact, government did exist. And so, therefore, you know, so if you're saying that the government didn't exist at that point in history, then maybe at some point you come back and clarify to me what precisely is what represents a government. Clearly, when you talk about it, if you move it forward to the 15th, 16th century, when you talk about the great African empires like Sahai, Mali, Ghana, Zimbabwe, that clearly there was a structure in place that even though it was horizontal, it was in place. Relative Western civilization was tended to be vertical in terms of its hierarchy. So therefore, that vertical division of labor that exists in that society did not mitigate against, you know, people being specialists, people working together, people doing things in terms of empowerment for all. And so, therefore, so philosophically, then we have to say that at that point in time, when we talk about the natural inclination of human beings, then we got to, based upon this issue, then we have to conclude that these particular individuals executed a kind of natural law which is antithetical to the kind of natural law that exists in the Western context. And at that point,
You can't argue. Well, I'm not talking about Mali and Songhai in the 15th century. I'm not talking about that because that is definitely during a period.
But I'm trying to follow your logic. I'm not following your logic. That's why I'm doing it.
I said is dynastic. When I was talking about Kemet, I was talking about dynastic Kemet, which is probably about 4,000 BC. So I'm not talking about after the other civilizations, and I'm not talking about the contemporary, because even the 15th century, you're still dealing with an imperialist, colonial, trade-based, expansionist continent. So that's not what I was talking about, I was talking about dynastic Kemet.
This is the influence of religion.
And I don't want to make this a debate between you and I. We just have different perspectives, going to respect your perspective. I don't want to debate about it. I just want to say that I have a different perspective. That's all.
And that's the whole point why we think it's important for among us as a people. We have these kind of dialogue. This is an important concept that is affecting our people, and it's affecting our ability to move forward. And if we are reacting or acting things that we don't understand and don't know of, and don't know of its relevancy to our well-being and our history, we'll continue to be used and abused, and we'll continue to be oppressed as a people. I mean, how many people since existing time, how many Africans since coming from Africa and coming out west to the diaspora have died around this whole concept of freedom and being free? And we still today are arguing and don't understand what this is. So this is the whole intent of trying to have a dialogue, of trying to come together for a more collective understanding of these concepts, these principles, these entities that have governed us for years, and if we don't define them, if it doesn't fit the interests of our understanding of the universe and our needs, we'll continue to suffer. So at this point in time, again, you are listening to Africa on the Move. I'm Brother Africa. We are taking calls right now. Our phone line is open. Please call in at 323-679-0841, and we have some callers that have been waiting very patiently. When we call your last four digits of your phone number, caller, you may ask your question or give your comment to this discussion. The theme of this day discussion is, are we free? What do we really mean by freedom and just freedom and this concept of being free? So my first caller, we're taking the last three numbers, is 4298. Caller 4298. Welcome to Africa on the Move. Your question or comment, caller? Yes, caller 4298. You have a question or comment, please? Okay, I guess we'll come back to our caller 4298. Let's go to our next caller. Caller 3300. Caller 3300. Your question or comment to this subject tonight? Caller
330.
Yes. Welcome to Africa on the Move. Your question or comment, please.
Okay, I'm going to make a comment in terms of tonight's subject on freedom. And I'm going to say that one of the keys of getting freedom is being able to have a lasting influence in terms of the communication system, because in the technology age, if you have no way of maintaining a constant media presence to get your point of view across, then you have no way that you're able to access freedom, because that's the best way to remain relevant, to let people know what's going on.
That's interesting. Carl, let me just generally, while I have you on the phone, in terms of the theme question, are we free, how do you see this whole question as it relates to our people here in the Western Hemisphere, particularly in the United States and throughout the Western Hemisphere? Where are you at on that question? Do you see ourselves as being free people, or do you see us being a people who is under the illusion of freedom? We are actually being controlled and being colonized.
I see a lot of us as striving towards freedom, but we have a misconception of what freedom is, because a lot of us are foolish enough to be asleep and believe in this concept of the American dream. It not only works for certain people that are given certain opportunities, but the reality is there are constant measures constantly put in place to, like I said, have us basically in this constant state of hypnosis, and we're basically following the trends of individuals that don't have any intention of allowing us to be at our best.
All right, caller, continue to listen to Africa on the Move. We thank you for your comment. We'll go to our next caller. We'll put you on hold if you want to come back. We'll come back to you later on. All right, our next caller, we have caller 6057. Caller 6057. Welcome to Africa on the Move. Your question or comment, please.
Revolutionary greetings, Brother Africa, and the other participants on the program. I want to add that we are definitely not free. Mm-hmm. And just in the terms of our ability to develop to our fullest human potential, mm-hmm, without impeding the ability of other people to develop, mm-hmm, to their fullest human potential also. Mm-hmm. And that is only realizable under a socialist society. It should be pointed out that class struggle is the motive force of history, and class struggle inside the African community has existed ever since we developed the ability to produce more than what's needed to meet our immediate needs.
Finish your point, Carla. I apologize.
Yeah. What I was going to say was that once we started producing surplus, then some of the other other attributes that you see in exploitative societies started coming into existence. Slavery, let's see, the fragmentation of labor, the value placed on certain forms of labor versus other forms, and that led to exploitation, and this was prior to even any foreign incursion coming into Africa. Now, it did intensify considerably with the numerous invasions that have taken place in Africa over the centuries or millennia.
Okay, Carl, we'd like to thank you for sharing your comments on Africa on the Move.
Brother,
continue the program. And, yes, to our panelists, y'all can respond to some of the things that you have heard from our listening audience today. Yes, Sister Zoe.
Brother Lee, may I jump in because, the callers made really relevant points. And I want to kind of talk about the contemporary political issue of freedom. You know, I think the illusion is so pervasive that it doesn't allow us to think outside of the box. But this is the reality. We're only free to the extent that the system allows us to be free. For example, we have a lot of brothers who are incarcerated because they have weed distribution charges. Well, when the system changes the law and then makes weed legal in some states and illegal in other states, then our brothers continue to be incarcerated, and, you know, people who can afford to get a prescription can grow weed in California legally. Our money, for example, if the nation comes tomorrow and says your $20 bill is no longer worth $20, it's worth $1, then what are you going to do? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If the
mm-hmm.
the system comes in and says, and they have under the NDAA, so, you know, we've regressed, and especially as black people, as African people, we've really regressed back to Jim Crow and past. But if they come and they say, you know, well, being black is going to be illegal, what are you going to do? We can protest in the street. We can do whatever we feel we need to do. But we are only free, even when you're talking about physical freedom, we are only physically free to the extent that the system allows us to be free, because at any given time that they change a law, then those of us who are affected by that change, no matter whether the change in the law is a fair change, a ridiculous change or not, whether the change in currency is a fair change or a ridiculous change or not, when they change it, that thing becomes real. And because we exist within the confines of those laws and rules, we have to follow until we change it or until we reform it. And true liberation and true freedom just doesn't operate like that. The NDAA gives the nation, I mean, we're systematically, our constitutional rights, which isn't the same as freedom, but our constitutional rights are systematically being dismantled by the system as we sit idly by under this illusion of freedom. They can come and pick me up, and, you know, I am a revolutionary. I'm not afraid to express it. I'm an activist. It is what it is. They can come to my house and pick me up right now and hold me without due process and confine me without due process under the NDAA. So when you're talking about what is freedom, again, I reiterate that we are only free to the extent when we exist in systems, we are only free to the extent that the system allows us to remain free.
Let me just weigh in. Listen, the question in terms of freedom, it's not an either or proposition. You don't have to reduce it to being spiritually free versus being physically free. You can do both simultaneously. That's not the issue. The reality is that you have
that's
to coexist.
But that's my issue, though.
Okay, that's your issue. That's fine. That's your issue.
Right.
That's fine. My issue is that you have to exist in the society. Whether it be a social society or a capitalist society or whatever society, even if it's whatever society, if it's animist society, you have to exist in it. In that context, decisions have to be made, resources have to be allocated, choices have to be made. And so therefore, in a system which doesn't afford me the ability in terms of being self-actualized, to be all I can be, I fight against. In a system that does that, I fight against. On the other hand, if there's a system which is humane, fair, and honest, I respect that system. Now, this question in terms of equality is red herring. Equality means nothing in the overall scheme of things.
We're talking about, do human beings get what they need from that particular system? If the system doesn't provide human beings what it needs, then people have an obligation to fight for something different. You don't simply cop out and say, well, you know what, I'm spiritually free, you know, my head is clear, I know who I am, I'm fine, so I don't care. That seems to me as a cop-out in terms of the greatest magnitude, in terms of what we talk about struggle. All the struggle that was before us, the Double B, the Boys, the Malcolm X, the Martin Luther Kings, they struggle for a reason. They struggle for the material well-being of African people, not for the spiritual well-being of African people or the existential being of African people. They fought for the material well-being of African people. This notion that somehow that when you talk about freedom, somehow it's imaginary, it's somebody's head, it's something that I can't deal with, something I can't understand. And so this notion that people have to be somehow, if you're going to be truly free, that somehow you just got to leave this world and live in another one, is something that I categorically reject.
Okay. You made your point, Brother Haki. Brother El-Haji, you have anything you'd like to say up to this point? On the subject matter,
yeah,
which
okay, what I would say is that freedom is linked to information and education. And, you know, until we have, in general, the information needed, it will be pretty much the same problem everywhere, here in the United States and also in Africa. And because... why I say that? Because a lot of people they were born after the colonization, and I'm talking about more recently. I'm not talking about the old time and the natural freedom, but I'm talking about contemporary people who were born after the colonization. They just see things and think that's the normal way it should go, and unless they have the information and the education to distinguish what's what, who doing what, and what is the purpose of these things in place, they will just follow the system and call it they are free, but it's not really a freedom. Because the basic example I can give is that the continent of Africa is the second largest in the world, and very big, very populous, the second largest continent with the population aspect. The most richest continent, and yet we cannot benefit from anything we produce, and you know, those are lack of information and education which can open people's eyes so they can benefit from whatever they have, and that tells that there is no such thing as freedom because you've been dictated to whatever you do. Same thing is here in the United States. A lot of things happen, and I think to be able to move people forward to get what they need to get to be free on different aspects, a lot of work has to be done in the sense of education, information, to create that to happen. Like Sister says, you know, we are free up to what the legal system allows us to be free on. And the only way around those things is to know how to get those things, you know, replaced by other laws and enable people to be where they're supposed to be. But actually, the freedom is not there yet.
Okay, let's see if we have a comment or question from our caller. Caller, we call out your last four numbers, number 4298. Caller number 4298. Any question or comment, please? Brother Moses, are you there? Okay, I guess he don't have no question or comments. Let's just continue this call. Again, our phone line is open at 323-679-0841. 323-679-0841. 0841. You know, when we look at this issue of this concept of freedom and this whole question of the state of being free, there are different ways how it has been packaged to our people. One of the ways it has been packaged is under this concept of trying to create an open society. Now, when we talk about this concept of an open society, how does that relate to this whole question of free and being free or striving for freedom? What is the history of this concept of open society and its relationship to this whole concept of creating a free society? I'll start with you, Dr. Zoe. Can you speak to that from your understanding? What do we mean by open society and how does it transcend into human freedom? If so, is this a myth or is that a reality based upon the historical workings?
Well, I'm going to defer to the brothers, Brother Lee, because this concept of an open society, I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. So I'll let somebody, if you can, you know, explain what that means or, you know, what you're speaking of, then I can speak on it. But I'm not even sure what that really means. And so I'll defer to the other brothers and maybe they have an answer.
Okay. Brother Hakeem?
Sure. Open society's belief that somehow if the institutions are transparent, that in fact it would negate against any kind of corruption or doing things in the best interest of all people. But of course, open society flies in the face of global capitalism, which says that seeks to be very secretive because the focus is not so much transparency or honest subjectivity, but it's the pursuit of money. And so, therefore, open society could never work in this context. And matter of fact, one of the things that's interesting when you look at the history in terms of the United States, one of the things that's interesting, they talk a great deal about you know, being a signatory to UN agreements. Now, one of the things is when we talk about these signatories, one in particular would think about the Convention Against Torture. And when you look at the Convention of Torture, it says that no one should suffer cruel, inhuman, or degrading punishment. But yet, you've got a situation not only in the gulags right here in America, but you look at Guantanamo in terms of the horrific treatment of those people who are, for no reason other than politics, who are locked up inside an institution. Now, the reason why open society won't work in America is because one of the things that when we talk about these signatories is that the U.S., Of all the declarations that it signed, one it refuses to sign is Declaration of Human Rights. It absolutely refuses to sign the Declaration of Human Rights. Why does it refuse to sign the Declaration of Human Rights? Because it signs the Declaration of Human Rights, it means that issues of food, housing, and education must become a must. Like the socialist nations around the world, which food, housing, and education is a priority for these countries, and the United States is not a priority because they're not a member of the Human Rights Declaration. Also, under the Human Rights Declaration, capitalism, which is very good in terms of exploitation of not only resources but also of human beings, could not exist simply because in the mindset of the capitalist, it would become inefficient because if you can't exploit people for resources for profit, then we're good odds, we're good on people. And so in the capitalist mindset, when you can't make profit on people, the system becomes ineffective or inefficient. And so, therefore, that's another reason why they would never sign a Human Rights Declaration. And also, and one of the things, and last, I'm going to conclude with this, but one of the things why the U.S. refuses to sign a Human Rights Declaration is the whole issue around crimes against humanity. Right now, you've got a disproportionate number of people who are currently locked up in prisons. You've got 2.5 million people currently in prison, over 5 million people who are under the auspices of the criminal justice system, either parole or probation. And so clearly that raises the question in terms of crimes against humanity, that you're locking up so many citizens. And so for that reason, an open society could never exist in America, and that's what I'm going to conclude with that.
Brother Erhaj, you'd like to expand on that? I know often when you look at President Johnson, Lyndon B. Johnson administration during this era, they often use that concept, and people brought into whatever it's supposed to mean. Hakeem alluded to an aspect of that, but I know that was a concept that seems to have its origin back during that time period. And for me, again, we often use different kind of concepts to package this whole concept of freedom around so where people can become, you know, be used as tools for other people's interests. So, you know, I was just wondering in terms of who other people take on it. Yes, Brother Erhaj, your question, please, comment. Go ahead, Brother.
Yeah, I pass. That's good. I agree with Brother Haki what he said.
Okay, well, we can move.
I think I would like to have my reparations then. I mean, if that's where we are, and so I think, you know, that's an argument for reparations for not only my enslaved ancestors, but for the brutality against African people and other races in throughout the world who have been enslaved, who have been exploited, who have been abused, you know, genocidal agendas, yeah, then, you know, I think that would be really a call for reparations for all people, specifically mine.
You know, historically speaking, when African people first were brought here to the Western Hemisphere by force, our ancestors, I believe, historically, how did they view this concept of freedom and this question of being free versus how our people view it today? I think earlier some of y'all alluded to maybe some of the tendencies. Can y'all further explain at least today how maybe our conception of this word freedom and being free has evolved or changed somewhat differently or fundamentally differently?
Can I go?
How our ancestors view that? Yes, Sister Zoe, you can go.
Well, I would sincerely argue that our ancestors' concept of freedom was being out of bondage, out of the bondage of the institution of enslavement, where not only their physical bodies, their spiritual bodies, their own, but even their generations were confined to this system where, you know, we didn't have freedom at all, and our sole purpose was to serve and was to produce. For the profit, you know, people want to talk about white men, but for the profit of this nation, and were it not for the backs and the hands of our ancestors, none of what we know would be here today. So their concept of freedom was just being out of bondage. And I think, too, understanding the spiritual and the physical being that they existed in before they were born here to the Western Hemisphere, I think that's also important, because a lot of people have a flawed perspective of what Africa was before European penetration and before the institution of enslavement. I think, you know, the fallacy that Africa was this primitive land and that African people needed to be colonized and civilized and all of that, I think people have that in their minds. So a lot of people don't really understand and respect the brilliance of our ancestors before enslavement. That's first. And second, I think one of the flaws and one of the illusions was that the civil rights, first the Emancipation Proclamation and the 13th Amendment, was supposed to be this call to freedom. And for our ancestors, it was definitely a first step, because that removed them from the institution of enslavement. But yet the 13th Amendment, in which people don't know, states that an individual that slavery in the United States and its territory shall be abolished unless an individual is duly convicted by law. So those 2.5 million people who are incarcerated are legally enslaved. And I would argue that, of course, that was the stipulation that allowed the country to reinstitute enslavement legally by promoting laws that forces the incarceration and especially now the disparate incarceration of black people, black males predominantly, over others. And then the Civil Rights Act, the passage of the Civil Rights Act, Brown versus Board, the Higher Education Act, gave a further illusion of freedom, because, again, after the emancipation, the fight was for equality in a segregated and in racist institutionally or institutional discrimination system. And so the Civil Rights Act passed, and then that was supposed to be the semblance of political and legal inclusion and political and legal equality, and then the right to exude freedom for African-American people in a democratic state. So I think now, you know, because of these laws and these political shifts, people have the idea that they are free because they're able to participate within the system. And, you know, I would argue, I mean, I'm a university professor, I have a PhD, people would consider me middle class and all that other stuff. And, you know, I think people get to that level and we believe that we're really truly free, but we're still operating in the confine of a system that for real doesn't allow me any real significant greater privilege than my people back in Berry Farms. I mean, just maybe a modicum of privilege over, but in the grand scheme of struggle, the struggle still remains the same.
Well, Haki, how does the respect of freedom differ historically to how Africans see themselves today. What's your perspective on that?
Well, I think I think Africans, you know, our ancestors historically, I think the sister's right. I think that they did want, they wanted to free themselves of the bondage of slavery. There's no question about that. But also keep in mind that, that those ancestors who understood that the kind of conditions that were created by the slavery was maladaptive or not conducive to the well-being mentally or otherwise for the African masses. And so those Africans who separated themselves, who went into what is known as the hush harbors, who secretly met, they didn't meet just to pray. They met to plan, because they also understood the issue in terms of spirituality was a very, very important one, but it was important to the human drive to be productive. And so that's what they had a need to be productive. And they said the only way they could do that was to leave that land to go someplace else and set up in terms of being productive. So I think our ancestors had a pretty clear idea in terms of, quote-unquote, what it is to be free and to strive for it. And I think just in relationship to those who snuck over to the hush harbors, they secretly did so. They searched and snuck away, and they didn't allow those individuals, you know, in the community who, for lack of a better term, were somewhat confused in terms of, you know, the conditions or exactly what was going on in society. So they realized that in order for them to do what they need to do for themselves and for their people, that they had to conceal their activities. And so, therefore, those people are similar to what we have today. Is, you know, these very progressive, these revolutionary individuals that exist in society, who realize, despite the price that you have to pay in terms of struggling for change, recognize that change is inevitable and change is desired. And so, therefore, the ancestors had a clear understanding in terms of what it is to be free. But let me just say one thing, Brother Africa, in terms of this question, in terms of religion and the question of freedom. I think that's, we've been dancing around it all night. So let me just say this. One of the things that a lot of preachers, when they talk about when they talk about freedom, or they talk about when they talk about being free, a lot of these preachers, when they talk about freedom, they're talking about spiritually being free. They're not talking about in terms of liberating yourself, you know, for the purposes of, you know, self-actualization, you know, being all you can be, being the best you can be, and being productive. So they're not talking about that. So in the mind of a lot of preachers, anytime you advocate for political and a social change in society, they're frowned upon it because the definition is that to do such a thing is anathema to being a good citizen. In other words, patriotism is more important than your freedom. In other words, country is more important than God. And so, therefore, these preachers preach this message. And so they have a unique way in terms of their understanding in terms of freedom, and they essentially reduce it to the spiritual aspect while negating the physical aspect or material aspect of human existence. And so, therefore, the thing I respect about our ancestors, they understood that when you talk about freedom, it encompasses both the spiritual and the physical, and that's the thing I like about the fact that when they snuck away, they not only prayed, they also strategized in terms of which way, how do we escape this place, which way forward, and what we have to do in terms of being free.
Professor Hodge, how do our people historically view this concept of freedom and being free versus brothers and sisters today? And I'm going to ask you to speak to it in, from your historical experiences from coming from mother from homeland, Mother Africa.
Well, thank you. I think it's not a secret that, you know, the African society in the past had a structure, and people were very organized. If you talk about the Egyptians, if you talk about Timbuktu, we know that we had an organization in Africa, and with the you know, the coming of the colonial power, a lot of things were kind of disturbed. And now what happened is that's a misportray of the continent and the history, the true history of what took on. But still, some places still have the old way of organization. If you visit Africa, you go to different countries, like you go to Ghana or to Senegal or to Mali, if you go to certain village, people still have organization, and the people are free to, you know, they not abide by, although it's been too long, the power, colonial power, is mixed up with the culture and the old way we were doing things. But still, you can go some places and you still do things in different ways. Now, what happened is a problem of one of our callers just mentioned it earlier on the early time of the show, that we have a problem with mediation, the communication system. I mean, we are portrayed, and the media plays a big role in the sense that people think that people are primitive, they don't have this, they have that, which is not true. I think, as I said earlier, the key problem is information and communication and education, which will help people to understand and to be able to maneuver in a better way. You can take the example of my brothers and sisters here who live in the United States. A lot of them, and, you know, I have many friends, and I've been always confronted with problems to explain what's going on back home. And it's not by blaming anybody, but it's a problem of lack of communication and information. Because a lot of people don't want to have any association with Africa because what they see on the media. I would not like to do anything with Africa if I was just saying negativity and I don't have any way to get the right information. So basically, that's what we have problem with. And, you know, it takes me to heart that we're still having these problems, and people need to do more research, and we need, as a whole, Africans, African-Americans, to come together and just trying to show the real side of our culture, of our past, and of our organization. I think it just helps people to be more free, because if you're free spiritually, that will help you to be free physically, because you will have more knowledge to, as far as who you are, and you will have the incentive to learn more as far as to protect your identity and your whatever you have as positive. So basically, that's something we all need to work on, and we all need also to develop the communication amongst us, because that's a lot of miscommunication. That's saying that, you know, we were free, and still people have some kind of freedom in certain extent, so which can be better if we learn more. Thank you.
Okay, we'd like to... Yes, Sister Zoe, yes.
I just wanted to say to what Brother Elhaj said, it reminds me, what he was saying reminds me of the quote from Marcus Garvey, that a man without knowledge of self is like a tree without root. So, yeah.
Point, you know, in terms of this issue when we talk about freedom, and some people may see in types of freedoms, they may see freedoms in terms of hierarchy, the individual versus the collective. I'd like to let's have that discussion, because I think part of the issue of our oppression as a people is based upon our conception of this illusion of freedom. You know, there are some people believe that this concept of individual freedom is more important than the freedom of the group or from a collective perspective. I'd like to just get your view on this whole concept of individual freedom, whatever that means, and versus collective freedom, and how does it play out into our daily struggle as a people? You know, Brother Haki, how do you see that?
Well, you know, this question of individual versus collective in terms of freedom, I think we can't divorce that discussion without critiquing somewhat the economic system that we live under. You know, one of the things, when I think back to 2008, and you look at the subprime debacle, and where,
so many people lost their homes. You had all kind of concoctions, all kind of class of debt obligations, all kind of credit default swaps, in which they all kind of financial instruments they use in terms of deceiving people for the purpose of maximizing profit. Of course, they made tons and tons of money, but at the expense of the economy. And in the process, then you have a downturn in the economy, which adversely impacts on working people in society. So one thing that people, working people, have to understand that those things that happen, you know, with respect to the economic system, even though we may not be privy to them, does have a devastating impact on the quality of life, whether you have access to good schools, to food, to jobs, and so forth and so on. Also, one of the things that when we talk about this whole thing in terms of individualism, one of the things is that often people don't talk about is the role in terms of Federal Reserve, in terms of, you know, being a private entity. A lot of people think the Federal Reserve is, in fact, you know, part of the government. In fact, the Federal Reserve is a private entity. And the Federal Reserve is free to make its own moves in terms of money expansion, whether to contract or expand money supply. Now, according to what the Federal Reserve does, it impacts on the value of money. So if they increase the amount of money, then what happens is we have so many dollars in circulation that the value of the dollar becomes worthless, which, of course, when in expanding the money, a so-called QE qualitative easing, when they do that, clearly it makes it possible for them to pay their bills, but at what cost? Now, keep in mind that when you create all that money which has no value and you use it to pay your bills, then that money has to be covered by something. Normally, that money is covered by your savings. In the banking industry, you would call it liquidity. In the global financial system, you would call it liquidity as well. Hold on 1 second. But what happens is that people are not saving. Why? Because people don't have jobs. People don't have jobs making decent wages. People don't have access to equity. Now, in a system which is 70% consumer spending, to take money out of the hands of working people is a very foolish concept, because these are the people that can infuse money into the system, expand the money supply, create a situation where the economy expands, which is good for everybody, not just the economy, but for working people as well. But because we live in such an individualistic kind of system, which is all about the individual, that the impact that these individuals make on the lives of tens of millions of people is of no consequences. And so we have to understand that any time you have a system where you empower the individuals at the expense of the group, then inevitably you're asking for chaos. You're asking for injustice. You're asking for suffering. And this is a fundamental problem that we're confronted with as a people in terms of which way we're moving forward. In a society, we say is that because you don't have surplus value, that in fact that your essence, your being is esoteric. That you have no real use in society. Your being is frivolous, and so therefore, as far as we're concerned, if you die, all the well. So this is the problem we have in terms of the system which props up the individual. Historically, most African societies, not all, but most African societies, always propagated the collective over the individual. And propagating the collective over the individual, you make sure you empower not just the individual, but you empower the society, and you empower the most rudimentary unit of a society, which is a family. And so, therefore, this is the problem in terms of propping up the individual. And this is the question that we have to ask ourselves. And then clearly, there are a lot of Africans who believe in that concept that, in fact, it's all about me. You know, it's all about me. That I don't care if anybody else is all about me. And once you buy into this narrow self-interest, then you implicitly become part of the problem without necessarily understanding that you become part of the problem. And so this is the dynamics or one of the problems that our people are confronted with in terms of which way forward in society. So definitely, I think a much apropos society would be one in which takes into consideration the need of the multitude, not its individual.
How you see that, Sister Zoe, how this question of individual freedom versus the collective freedom of the people, how you see that play out in society, and is, you know, how do we overcome that if we're going to operate as a group to deal with our broader oppression as a people as a whole?
Well, I think that the concept of individualism and collectivity is kind of like an oxymoron in society, because capitalism is based on this concept of of free enterprise and individual success, but society, the society that capitalism exists in is really based on a whole collective embrace and a whole collective conformity to a capitalist system. And so simultaneously you have a system that's saying, okay, yeah, if you're Bill Gates and you can do X, Y, and Z, then you can be a trillionaire. And those who didn't achieve didn't because of some individual characteristic, but yet we're all prompted and socialized to conform to society exactly the way it is. And so class consciousness and collective consciousness really becomes essential to engaging in the struggle for liberation. And, you know, for me in my own activist space, and this is my activist space, collective consciousness involves really understanding the peril of the capitalist system, and not just the capitalist system, but understanding the peril of a class-based system or an exploitation or an oppressive-based system that thrives off of control and dominating resources, exploiting labor for production, and then allowing a group of people and or a government to determine how the resources and the wealth from production and labor is distributed. And I think, you know, in this system, there are so many things that are established to keep us away from class consciousness. The education system is a conformist system. Our religious system is a conformist system. And where our families and individually, where we're not really looking beyond what we're in and taking a broader perspective to think outside of the box, then we also become a conformist system within our family base. That's what I think.
Brother Haji, what's your take on this individual so-called freedom versus collective, and how it's playing out, and how do we overcome that? How are we going to move as a people if we have individuals seeing that concept of the individual is more important than the collective? How are you moving forward?
Yeah, I think that it's illusion to just think that your personal success will be enough to get you out of trouble. It's just, lack of knowledge which makes people think like that. Because, basically if you, on your own, to hang you is just going to be too easy. Collectively, you become stronger. You can advocate for more of everything you need. And, it is more powerful, and the goal of the capitalism is just that, divide and to have more power, more authority to dictate whatever the corporation or whatever it is wanted to establish. And I think that what the way out is just the dialogue and information, and is always key to educate people, and so people can understand what the take on is, what they're dealing with, because if you see, as Africa is weakened, because we have these little small countries, some of them rich, some of them are not, have all the resources in the world, but still, that's the example, prime example we can use, and still cannot achieve anything. The poverty is there. People cannot have companies. There is no big companies there, and yet they have everything, because it is like the solo. They ride solo, and they don't come together, and that's a problem. Because if one country decides to sell something, nobody back him up, and the price he's going to sell the oil or the diamond or whatever it is will be at the mercy of the buyer. So it's translated to the individual human being also. If you're an athlete or whatever it is, and you think that, having your personal success or your personal freedom will not, is enough, that's a wrong idea. But the solution we suggest is that, you know, people have to keep the discussion open, keep to talk to people, keep to inform people, because some people, they don't have enough sense or the opportunity to get the information needed to think otherwise, because, you know, sometimes is the environment you live in dictates your outcome. You know, it's rare, very rare, you can see somebody who's from here and just move on to the other side. So that tells that, you know, people have to keep talking, keep informing, keep helping people to enlighten other people. You know, everybody has the same concept, not everybody has the same idea, not everybody has the same view of the future, or how to come out to some of this trouble or problem we are facing. So basically, what the African society been doing, you know, before was just having the same view, a global a group view on everything. And they also have like an organization, governmental organization, where everything is discussed in the village. And people have the consensus to act together on every matter. So I think that's the way to go, and we hope that many people will understand that.
Okay, we'd like to just let our listening audience know that our line is open. We welcome you to hear your views and comments by calling in at 323-679-0841. When you call in, make sure you press 1 if you have a question or comment. If you have a question or comment, make sure you press 1. You first dial 323-679-0841. You press 1 if you have any question or comments. And at the same time, we want to let you know that also that if you'd like to hear this program and other programs, you always are welcome to visit our archive by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/ and type in Africa-on-the-move. You can view all the previous programs. As we said today, the theme of this program is I'll Be Free. We're really trying to get a better understanding of this idea, this concept, in terms of freedom and this word of free. And trying to come to some resolution. Either our people are free or they are not. If they are not free, then what they need to do to get free? If they're free, then why is it that people can control our daily lives and we have very little input to how we can change it? So we have with us today our panelists today, Brother El Haji out of Senegal, Sister Zoe, Professor at Virginia State, and Brother Haki with the African Awareness Association discussing this. I believe we still have a caller on the line. We're going back to one of our callers, see if they have any additional comments they'd like to say up to this time. Caller number 4298. Caller 4298. Any questions or comments based upon today's subject matter, caller?
Yeah, this is Brother Robert Moses saying good evening, and it's a great panel, and I'm glad that as you go on, you get more deeper and deeper into your analysis, and it's profound analysis. I mean, this class struggle is a real thing. You know, we live our lives. We're struggling to food, clothing, shelter, and companionship, and this struggle brings about a situation where there's a government comes into existence in order to control the distribution of these food, clothes, and shelter, and et cetera. And so we got a class society. And, you know, school is not out to the bell rings. We have to educate to liberate. And self-determination is, you know, we're pushing for freedom. Freedom is to be able to have that companionship, that food, clothing, and that shelter at your disposal. And unfortunately, it's not readily available. It's a struggle to obtain it. And so we have a situation where there's an irresistible historical trend where countries want their independence, nations want liberation, and the people want revolution in essence, because that's the only way they can obtain the good services, free health care, free education, and all that's possible. Another world is possible if we just get together and struggle for it.
Okay, Colin, we'd like to thank you for your comments and views and continue to support Africa on the move. Let's try our other callers, see if they have any additional question comments. Caller number 6057. Caller 6057. You have any other additional question or comments?
Yes, I do. Thanks, Brother Africa. I appreciate it, the opportunity. I wanted to comment on what you raised about this concept called the open society. I wanted to comment on that. That is actually a philosophical viewpoint that's espoused by George Soros. And basically, it is a form of a transparency, as Brother Haki alluded to earlier. But what I want to add to that is sort of like a philosophical system that advocates development by all and any means necessary, even at the expense of other people's need to develop also. It's kind of like related to an old economic concept called laissez-faire. In other words, let the market does whatever it wants to do, regardless of who gets hurt in the process. And by open society, that means open from the standpoint of free of any sort of regulation or constraint. And that's what I wanted that to add to that discussion. In addition to what your panelists were saying earlier regarding what our ancestors' concept of freedom was, I think it's somewhat different from today's generation for the most part. It's because mainly because during colonization and chattel slavery, the masses of my people had no access to the capitalist educational system at all. And as a result of the end of chattel slavery and the struggle against colonization, there were some a small number of people that were able to get access to capitalist education. And as a result of that, it has affected our view of freedom, because it's a lot of these people that have this education that define what our notion of freedom is through the media, entertainment, et cetera. So that's what I wanted to add to that discussion.
Thank you, my brothers. We'll continue for listening and supporting Africa on the Move. And caller, continue to support this program. And to our panelists, we'll let them just make any kind of response they may have based upon those two comments by our listening audience. Anyone have any comments they would like to respond back?
Well, I think one of the things that when we talk about, how concepts often change, actually the individual who coined that phrase after Karl Popper, P-O-P-P-E-R, and George Soros picked it up and sort of changed it around to give it a sort of a neoliberalism spin in terms of, how capitalist system should operate. But in terms of the brother who called earlier, in terms of the material needs of human beings, I think he's very, very important. And it doesn't matter where you are on the planet. Human beings are going to have an intrinsic need for things like food, shelter, clothing, and education. People are going to need that irrespective of where they are on the planet. And so it's coming upon people, wherever they are, wherever those things are not provided for human beings, wherever human beings are not in a position to despise those kind of things, then you have obligation, morally and otherwise, politically and otherwise, to actually struggle to achieve that. Because this is the very essence. So you can't realistically talk about, autonomy, or you can't talk about self-actualizing without, as Maslow's hierarchy alludes to, without having the very basics. So those are the basics in terms of human existence. And so therefore, to start would be a social system. Ultimately, to the point of view, if people evolve, then you can create a truly communist system.
in which people would be selfless, in which they would understand that it's in their interest to share and to care because it's in their interest. Unlike capitalism, which teaches people that only your interests are important. And even though it may eradicate millions of people, even though it may foment all kind of chaos and anger and hostility, even though it may contribute to a way of life which is stressful, you do it simply because it's all about the bottom line. So for the mass of the people, we have to decide what kind of world you want to live in, what kind of system you want to live under. So that's my take on that.
In a way, that's like to respond to our last set of listening audience.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm responding to anyone or anything, but when I'd like to say that, you know, when we talk about freedom and liberation, and I'm an educator, our educational system is probably one of the greatest contributors to our psychological enslavement, because the educational system is not about promoting consciousness, awareness, critical, analytic thinking. Our educational system is about promoting the truth or the agenda and the propaganda that's designed to keep us in a state of pretty much ignorance or apathy to what capitalism really is. You know, if you look at the way that the school of education is set up, if you look at the way that curriculums are set up and the way that teachers are trained, they're not trained to teach children to be creative thinkers. They're trained to teach the concept of fact that we all know isn't really fact. For African children, and African American children, they're trained to teach about the fallacies about Africa and about African people that are designed to keep us in bondage and keep us laborers and keep us, you know, in a state of apathy where we are not even attempting to collectively get together and fight for liberation. And then, especially in the United States, when you're talking about the issue of race, it is designed to keep us separated, to believe that, you know, somebody has a better than the others, when in reality class-based systems state that working class people, regardless of the different degrees of privilege they might have, we still exist in a state of oppression. And so, you know, I think that until we get ready to step outside of the box of the confines of capitalism and begin to really look critically and think critically about what capitalism does and what types of bondage capitalism in and of itself creates, then, you know, we're not going to really know true liberation until it's too late. And, you know, the argument, too, now is that capitalism is falling on itself. Technology is replacing human labor. People are dropping out of the job market, and so unemployment, poverty, disease, and all kinds of ills that are caused by the capitalist system, you know, are creating a strangle in society where I'm hoping that people will reach the consciousness, the class consciousness that we need to really be able to seek our true freedom and our true liberation outside of this capitalist system. Because I don't think that true freedom and liberation will ever exist within the confines of capitalism.
Sister, it's amazing you said that, because I would ask both of y'all, all three of my panelists today, to deal with this question. And my question was, is the capitalist system designed for people to be free? And you
Absolutely not. You sort of
addressed that. That's your position. Okay, what about yours,
yes.
Brother Haki, and then Brother Erhaj?
Well, listen, let's be very clear on one point. We were born here as laborers. It's a process that actually started in Greece. Even though we understand slavery existed in Africa, in ancient Africa, but it wasn't the same kind of slavery. So I'm going to get that out of the way, so people don't accuse me of being partisan in terms of my views. The thing is that clearly we were brought up here as slaves, and this whole notion that the colonists came over here to be independent and set up a world in which people were truly free, people were truly liberated, was a facade. It wasn't real. And so as soon as they had an opportunity to set up shop, they began to create all kinds of associations, which explicitly created monopolies. And so therefore the intent clearly was to control the economics of the nation. And now when we look at the society as it currently exists today, you know, any capitalist will tell you, when you talk about disparities between those who have and those who don't have, it's the way capitalism is supposed to work. You're supposed to have some who are wealthy and the vast majority who are poor or who are not well off. That's by design. That's not a fluke. That's by design. When they talk about the fact that when they talk about in a capitalist society that your education, your access to quality education is based upon your ability to pay, it's not hyperbole. They're telling you exactly how the system is designed to work. And so, therefore, in this context, we got a system in America which is essentially that, you know, if you live in wealthy neighborhoods, then you're assured of going to quality schools. If you live in poor neighborhoods, you're assured of going to poor schools. And as a consequence, kids in the poor neighborhoods don't get access to the kind of information that they need. Now, keep in mind, we all understand that these schools are designed to indoctrinate. They're not designed to liberate or to get kids to think critically. At least not now. At least when I was in school, we had African teachers who took upon themselves to make sure that we thought critically about what was going on in the world. In today's society, if these teachers articulate or encourage these kids to understand their situation objectively, then they'll probably be out of a job tomorrow. And so it's a different paradigm that exists now in terms of education. But clearly, when you talk about funding, you know, educational system, when you talk about wealthy suburban, you know, districts, you know, clearly they're in a position to afford higher property taxes as a consequence of better schools. And relative, you know, poor neighborhoods, that's simply not the situation which people are struggling to exist day in and day out.
Okay, brother, Hodge, what's your position? Are you supporting also the idea that capitalism is designed not to allow people to be free?
You know, the capitalism is a system which is, you know, which aim to produce, you know, labor, and that's the system. I mean, it's not complicated to understand because we live it every day. What people are taught in school is to, you know, to guide them to a same path than our parents and our grandparents. Sometimes organizations try to break away, but they don't have enough support to have an alternate solution to the system. You know, I can mention one high school, which was created by a couple of college professors, African American, and you know, they created the first Islamic, you know, school in Virginia. It's not just Islam they teach there, but it's just it's something different. They teach also, you know, religion principle, but at the same time they do all the other curriculum than the regular high school do. And it's just giving the kids another mindset that they can have, you know, as possibilities, you know, something different. You know, they learn everything the regular school teaches, but at the same time they do something different. But initiatives like that need to be really encouraged and support. Also, you know, we have different other organizations. There is an organization called African Community Network here in Richmond. We are trying to bring, it's not about, you know, a financial aspect or anything like that, but trying to bring people to have another mindset that all people who are migrated here from different countries of Africa should be in the same arena and think the same way and help each other. And that's why that organization was created. So those are some kind of small, tiny steps, but need to be encouraged, need to be developed, need to create different similar program to educate again and inform people. Because if not, the capitalism system doesn't allow anything different. And, you know, it's going to be worse if people don't come with different solutions to oppose to what we're having now, you know. So basically, you know, my other two participants, Dr. Zoe and Haki, pretty much say the same thing, and these are some kind of a solution we can approach and, you know, trying to have another alternate solution.
You know, what is the parameter?
That's what I have on that.
Okay, thank you, my brother. What is the parameter if we are to judge the progress that our people are making and getting closer to the so-called concept? And we still are divided in terms of what we mean by freedom and what we mean by being free, the state of being free. But in terms of what should be the parameter that we should use in terms of having some kind of measurement of saying we are getting closer to this idea or this reality. For example, historically speaking, that was the logic of thinking that one of the reasons why our people are oppressed and why we are not free is because we don't have enough elected officials in the political system. We don't have enough mayors, congressmen, lawyers, etc. Now we have many mayors, congressmen, lawyers, etc., but still the conditions of our people are worse off now than they ever been before. One of the conditions is that we don't have capital, we don't have money. And the more of us get money, the better our condition would improve collectively. Now we have many millionaires and a few billionaires, but still the conditions of our people have gotten worse. What is wrong with that picture, Sister Zone?
Well, I mean, again, you know, capital becomes relevant because we live in a capitalist system. And, you know, when people are talking about gaining freedom through the very system that oppresses us, it's absurd, because the system that is the foundation of your oppression is not going to save you or give you your freedom if bonding you is what they're gaining their profit from. So in capitalism, you know, labor is essential. Maintaining power dynamics is essential. Maintaining wealth for the ruling class is essential. How does the ruling class gain its wealth? Through the exploitation of the labor and resources, the labor of the masses and the resources of the colonies that they, you know, have control over. So I think one of the flaws with us specifically is we're looking for our oppressors to free us. We're looking for our oppressors to liberate us, and we're not going to gain liberation or freedom within the confines of that oppressive system. And then I wanted to go, because we're talking about freedom, I had to go and find the definition of freedom. And the definition of freedom, as stated on this little website, is the power or right to act, speak, or think as one wants without hindrance or restraint. The absence of subjection to foreign domination or despotic government, and the state of not being imprisoned or enslaved. So when I think about what is freedom, using the definition of freedom and relating it to the struggle of my people, we're certainly not free, because neither one, two, or three applies to us. And so I think, you know, true liberation is going to come, you know, from us understanding and coming to grips with the fact that if we really want freedom, we're not going to find it within the system. And so we have to, and as Brother Brother Haki said, going in and strategizing in the woods by ourselves outside of the confines of the slave masters or the overseers, that's important. And basically that's what we need to do now. We need to be wise enough and strong.
He didn't say wood.
Brother Haji, you know, what was that seed you planted? What was that you said? It wasn't they left. What was the name of this? You were talking about it earlier when they left and they went. They didn't go in the woods, but they left and they went in their own corners and they strategized. What was that?
It's called Brush Harbor.
Okay,
they went in caves. The caves, the brush hopper.
Oh, Okay, so it's the cave then. So we could go. I don't care where we go, but we need to go somewhere outside of the confines of the system. I know. And then define it. Until then, we're going to remain in bondage.
You think we'll get these rich African millionaires to do that? Do anybody lie to you think we can get these rich African millionaires and these high-class so-called intellectuals who have been appointed to be as so-called representatives to be willing to change the objective conditions of functioning in terms of how we do things in a different environment that they're not used to? That can be really interesting.
No.
But I understand you. I understand your position, Sister Zoe. Brother Haki, how do you explain that contradiction? More male, more millionaires, condition of African
Worse? You know, you talk about the question in terms of more African representation, you know, and the power, and why it doesn't translate into anything meaningful for the African masses. You know, brother, let me tell you something. I remember Mary Robinson. She was a UN representative from Ireland, and she talked about the incarceration of African people here in America, and she talked about it in a shame. Recently, a brother out of Syria was talking about the large incarceration of African people in society, and he said that, well, if the African people picked up arms and asked for support, nobody claimed them, because what's going on in terms of the African people in the society is tantamount to genocide. Now, when he say that is no imagination. When you look at the incarceration rate of young black men. I mean, if you go back as far as 1974, where you have 47 out of every 100,000 citizens, you had 47 were African. In 79, out of every 100,000, you had 368 who were Africans who were incarcerated. If you go back to the 90s, for every 100,000 people in the U.S., 3,370 were actually African people, and which brings us to today, in which you have 2.5 million people who are currently incarcerated. Now, if you extrapolate, you got to agree that as the society deteriorates, then clearly there is a much stronger impetus in terms of making sure that you incarcerate more and more African people. And so it's such that I think it's incumbent upon our people to understand. I hope you can understand. Hear me. I hope you can hear me. I'm getting feedback.
Yes, we can hear you.
You hear me?
Yes, we can. We can hear
you. Okay, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's incumbent upon our people to understand the implications in terms of wholesale incarceration of African people and what it means to their lives. Now, those people in power, those people who are making tons of money, do you raise the question, would they take a stand in terms of addressing these issues, the adverse impact on the African community? Of course not. Because keep in mind, the name of the game in capitalism is what? Money. So they're making money. So in their mind, they're somebody. The problem is that when poor people start internalizing this notion that your worth is determined upon your value of your life is dependent upon what kind of money you have, how big your car is, how big your house is, or how much money you got in the bank. That is a quintessential problem, and that I agree that in terms of, you know, liberation theology, it's important that we understand that things, material things, does not define us as human beings. I might be poor, but by virtue of my virtue of proud of this creation, I know I'm somebody. And so, therefore, you're not going to treat me as less. So, but to ask these people to realistically step up and to even articulate the problems that confront our people, it's not going to happen. So we understand that. Barack Obama can stand on the pulpit and let me not use that word, but he can stand there and he can say, talk about that African people need to be more responsible. I mean, that's all in good. I mean, that's fine. But the problem is that being responsible is not going to eradicate the social and political structures that exist that are geared toward marginalizing, dehumanizing African people. Are you man enough to talk about those structures in place? And particularly when you talk about incarceration of young black men, you got no job, so you incarcerate them. Why don't you talk about this? Because this is something that potentially is going to affect the entire African community. So, you know, so to answer your question, Brother Africa, no, I don't expect people with money to come forward. It's not in their interest to come forward because, according to the name of the game, it's about money. They got money, so therefore shut your mouth and be quiet.
Mm. Okay, in closing, I'll allow each one of you about a minute to make a closing statement to our people in terms of there seems to be a consensus on this panel that our people are not free, even though 99.9% of them think they are. What can you say to our people to wake them up and make them realize they are not free? In order to move forward, we must come to that realization. I start with you, my brother, Brother El Hodge. What can we say to our people when it comes to that question?
Well, what I would say is that we definitely we're not free, and you know, people need to be conscious of this matter, and you know, trying to reach out to each other and trying to open their mind and have a putting in place a strategy to just overcome the system, you know, and it's not going to be an easy thing to do. But first, it needs to be to start, you know, multiple dialogues where people have to think about how to they can help each other. The more wealthier trying to set up things where people can just use and learn more about their culture and the possibility they have and move forward. I don't see any other way around but educating people and, you know, create more possibility like this show where people can share and enlighten other people. Basically, you know, information is the key. Basically, I'm suggesting, and you know, anytime you have a chance and talk to people, just help them out, give them information you have, because it's not the system doesn't allow people to have time or to be able to research or, but other avenues group discussion can help people, because you just gotta find people where they at to be able to help them out, because if you sit and wait until they come to you, it will never happen. And basically, that's one of the things I'm going to suggest, and working on it.
Okay, Brother Hodge, we've got to stop you. We've got to stop you, and thank you. 1 minute, Sister Zoe, what do you say to our people?
I would probably just say that we owe. I know that I owe my ancestors who gave their lives to seek freedom and to seek liberation and to fight their way out of bondage. And I just think that we just have to understand what the system is, be really mindful and conscious about what the system is and the way that we're still enslaved, and we just can't be afraid to organize, to communicate, organize, and to fight for our liberation.
Can you do it about 4 to 5 seconds, Brother Haki? What can you say to our people?
Sure, Brother El Hodge is absolutely correct. This is a global struggle, and it's important that we understand the terrain in which we navigate. The injustice that inflicts African people global, and the solution is not only national, but it's international. And so we have to work together in terms of changing this and creating a new paradigm.
We'd like to thank all our participants, Brother El Hodge out of Senegal. We'd like to thank our sister, Dr. Zoe Spencer from Virginia State, and our brother, Haki Kamafi, organizer for the African Women's Association, and our listening audience for sharing their views and comments on Are We Free? And we discussed the issue of freedom, what it means to us, and we hope that we have given you some clarity in terms of this concept, what it means, and more than anything else, we want to continue to have the dialogue so we can arrive at this concept called unity of thought, so we can have unity of action. Until next time, remember, this is a community project under the African Awareness Association. Anyone who have questions or comments, they can email us at African_Awareness_Association@Yahoo. We are in the process of organizing an International African Festival for the whole world to see that will take place in Richmond, Virginia. We'd like to have your support. Any contribution that you can send, please send it to the African Awareness Association, PO Box 4433, Richmond, Virginia, 23220. Until next time, we see you next week, same time, same station. Let's grab to go forward, ever, backwards never. This has been Brother Africa coming into your homes today. We thank you.
Thank you.